The future is you. Your passion. Your imagination. Your hard work. And now, with the help of Hypnospace, you have the tools and the time to make it a reality. Witness the dawning of a new world where sleep time is no longer downtime. It's where the future is built. A future built by you. Hypnospace.
Hello.
One sec. It's got it going to my freaking... I hate Skype. Hold on a second.
Okay, cool. Let me make sure. Yep, it is sounding fine, I guess. Okay, cool.
Excellent. Well, the first thing I wanted to ask was, obviously music and audio means a lot to the actual game, but it means a lot to you as well. So I wondered if, to start this whole thing off, whether you could talk a little bit about your musical background and your earliest days learning instruments and music.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, music wasn't a thing that I really got into until maybe later in high school. I guess that's a relatively normal thing for people, you know, in their formative years there, start connecting more deeply with music. But before that, it was game development and wanting to be a game developer. And I had this easy-to-use game-making software called Click and Play, and I would make little games with that. And so that really was my focus, was like pixel art and trying to do something with game development. And then I ended up dropping out of high school, and my parents took me to a game development college, I guess you could say, called Full Sail. It's a private school, school. And I did the tour, and at the end they had a question and answer thing, and so I told the dude about the little games I'd been making, and that this would be about around 2005, I guess. And he said, there's no market for this kind of thing, and these games look like they're from the 90s or something. So, you know, you really need to just either do art or do programming and learn that, and then work for a bigger company, because you'll never be able to sell a game like this. And I listened to him, and he kind of like destroyed my dream of like making games, because you know, and in 2005 that may have been true. There's no market for, you know, it had this market hadn't cycled back yet, you know, the nostalgia for this era of sort of pixely games, I guess. And so he was right at the time, but 3 or 4 years later, of course, that changes. But so I was like, well, I have my crappy job, I gotta have some outlet, and maybe if I, and I was getting into progressive rock a lot at the time, as one does, I guess, at that age. But you know, it started, I guess, with Pink Floyd was where it maybe started with me. Echoes by them and some of their 70s records I thought were really, you know, I was connecting with and finding them super interesting, and the sonic elements. And then I moved from them to, like, you know, King Crimson and all of these prog bands. And then from there, I got more into jazzy stuff and the weird prog subgenres from the 70s, like krautrock and all this. And then I was inspired, and so I started working on my own music, and I was in a few proto bands. Like, they were never bands that toured, but we would get together and jam and write songs that would never be recorded, you know. And none of us were actually proficient enough in our instruments, because, you know, I got a MIDI keyboard, and I was just fiddling around, hitting things, usually only white keys at the time. I didn't, because I didn't know anything about music yet. And which, you know, it works. It's fine. And some of the stuff that I made back in that phase of my life when I gave up on games, I listen to it now, and I'm kind of surprised at how inventive some of the ideas I had were, because I didn't know what I was doing, so I'm just hitting random stuff. Sometimes I'd throw in a black key if it would sound okay. And then that's how I got started, really. I also had a tracker called Modplug Tracker. It's a free tracker. And I started learning tracker music as well as a way to put a soundtrack to some of my games. But that was before my sort of trying to start a band, making my own music phase. But that's really how I got started. I got after Modplug Tracker, I moved on to Ableton Live as my DAW. And I still use Ableton as my primary, you know, way to make music, or primary program is Ableton Live still. I don't know if that's how you say it. I think Ableton. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. And then, so yeah, that's how it started. And when, you know, I didn't really make any money on anything I released, even though I tried music wise, because of course that's incredibly difficult. If you're just some rando, you just put your music up there, no one's going to click it really, unless you have some reason for them to, and I didn't really have a good reason. So, you know, when the indie market started becoming more prominent, maybe around 2008 or 9 with Braid and some of these other games, and Fez, and was it 2011? I started getting hope again that I could do games. So then I transitioned back into like relearning some of the game making stuff, but the stuff I learned with music, you know, was very helpful for that as well. So.
Yeah, and there was actually, because you mentioned this period where you came back into game design, and there was this earlier version of Hypnospace Outlaw, so I wondered if you could talk a bit about that as well, and the transition period from that into this full main game that's come later down the line, and if you felt a responsibility to maybe kick things up with the music for that.
Yeah, so the early version of Hypnospace Outlaw, that was something I made in 2014 as a sort of a side project. I was working on Dropsy at the time, which was a point-and-click adventure, more traditional, you have a character. But I was pretty burnt out on working on that. It had over 100 scenes, and it was just so much work. So I wanted to make something very small, and something where the music was more central to it. So I made this soundtrack first for it was called Hypnospace Enforcer. And it was a little more, I guess you could say, vaporwavey, a little more... the plot was a little more futuristic. It still had the conceit of when people go to sleep at night, they wear headbands to access the internet. But it was more futuristic in tone. And so what I did, though, is, you know, I enjoy the process personally of making music and working on music more than I think I enjoy the process of game development or the process of art for games. It's just... I never really get sick of making music, whereas the other stuff, it just grates on me after a while. So I started making a soundtrack to this game that I hadn't made yet. I had some ideas, which was Hypnospace Enforcer. And then I made the game around the soundtrack. Yeah. So... Oh, my dog's visiting me. Hi.
Don't worry, I'm surprised mine hasn't so far yet.
So yeah, that's where that came from. And it was an endless runner, I suppose, where you go, you're on this information superhighway, and you have to find these users on the information superhighway who broke a law. And then once you tracked them down with your little car... they would send you little messages and you would get more context about the law that they broke. And usually there was a very good explanation and you would maybe feel like a jerk for taking them down. But the language in the game was like, yeah, get these scumbags. But and you would be rewarded for it. But, you know, ideally you'd be like, oh, this person, you know, this is an old lady who doesn't know that she's spreading viruses around, so, but I gotta do my job. So and you know, and you'd have pop-ups you'd have to close on that level because there were know, she had spyware or adware or something. So and the pop-ups would interrupt the gameplay of the endless runner twitchy stuff. So it was, you had to kind of grab your mouse and close the pop-ups and then go back to the other controls to move your little car around on the highway, which I thought was fun. And the in-between screens, the level select information screens, had this operating system sort of flavor to them, which when we started making Hypnospace Outlaw, that was still like that. That was the basically a level select screen. You would browse the internet to find these people who were breaking some internet law, and then the main part was going to be that you go on this endless runner highway and try to track them down. And it just ended up being more fun as we started working on the game to mess with the operating system stuff. So the highway part really kind of it kind of became a little bit of a meta thing, because we transitioned it from like an actual main way to enforce laws to like the project of an in-game fictional programmer. So, yep.
And you mentioned about building things around the music as well, which you absolutely pick up through playing the game, because it's so full of all these different characters and all these different genres, and even genres that are essentially completely made for the game. So I wanted to get into that a little bit. I mean, you've got things like cool punk, which is probably the foremost like created genre within the game. So I was interested in how you developed that, and what was behind the decision of bringing together these tones like sleigh bells and the Christmas theme and soda and things like that.
So, yeah, cool punk is probably the most referential one of those in terms of referencing a real world thing. And I would say that that's, you know, a vaporwave pastiche. Because, yeah, vaporwave, I guess its earliest albums, releases, had this sort of political bent or somewhat, you know, anti-corporate, sort of anti-capitalist bent to it, and the artists behind that stuff were, you know, pretty clear about that. But and so they used these sort of nostalgic images and sounds to sort of also in some way be critical of those things, and the weird connections we feel for those things that we were basically sold. So and now, and you know, later on in that movement, it sort of lost that and became more about the nostalgia itself and celebrating the nostalgia. So I think not that the movement was ever like really impactful or anything in a meaningful way, but I think that it was amusing to me that it started out as a thing being critical, and then later it became a thing about celebrating that, you know, maybe in your childhood you remembered going to the mall, and so this, like, dead malls thing sort of resonates with you and makes you feel this sort of longing, you know, for when you were younger, maybe. And so in the game, I was kind of playing around with that, because, of course, there's these subcultures around, I guess you would call them micro genres, but these subcultures online around these genres. And then you have people on these forums or these subreddits, I guess, who might be like, no, this is actually about this, and you guys are fake vaporwave or whatever. And so, you know, you'd have people saying, no, you're fake vaporwave, or vaporwave only uses samples and you're using original compositions, so you're not this. And I thought it would be a fun thing to play with that dynamic with our in-game characters. And the other side of that is that I didn't want to directly reference anything like from the real world, not directly anyway. We have a sort of a Pokemon-esque thing in the game. Squishers are really cool. Squishers are so much fun. There's slimy, gooey animals, giraffes and wolves, and so much more. Buy 'em, squish 'em, you've got a collectible. I feel like a good way to age your game is to directly reference stuff. So we don't want to make just put Vaporwave in there or put Pokemon in there. We wanted to make our own alternate versions of these things and then explain what they are in the universe. So that if you're like a player, who knows, maybe someone will play this in 30 years. And then all of that stuff will be relatively obscure at that point. And they won't know what the heck that is. So we kind of tried to future-proof it, I guess you could say, a little bit. By making up our own of everything, our own versions of everything. And then inside the world, more or less explaining what it is through context. Instead of relying on some kind of foreknowledge or some kind of relying on players to know what all this stuff is coming into the game. Then you would lose a lot of people, I think, if you tried to do that. So that was the main reason, I guess. And it's just fun to just make up your own universe of things. But I think that was the main reason we decided to go all in on like our own genres, our own movements.
Coolpunks, as you say, they're doing this nostalgic sample thing, but they're sampling the in-game character of Chowderman, who is such a huge character within the game, so has to be brought up and has to be talked about a little bit. And he's almost like this somewhat kind of washed up rock figure who's worked on all these different corporate jingles throughout time, so that's why Coolpunks almost like to parody him through their music. But how was this this character developed then? And indeed, the collaboration with Hot Dad as well, who I believe plays him.
Yeah. So I met Hot Dad. Hot Dead? That's an interesting possible band name. Anyway, I met him through some internet forum, and he made a song called Taco Bell Christmas, which I thought was funny. And so we started talking, and... originally, he was just going to make jingles. There was going to be no explanation as to why all of these jingles in our world were sung by the same person.
Granny Cream's hot butter ice cream. We take the hot butter, mix it with the ice cream. Freeze it up cool, you can see it on your screen. Put it in your microwave, make it real hot like a soup or a dip. We call it heat and sip. Very tasty and healthy too. Granny Cream's hot butter ice cream.
And then, so after, maybe halfway through the development, I was thinking, okay, our game is less goofy than it was gonna be and has more internal consistency with its world now. Like, things make sense, things connect to other things, and it's really bugging me that all of our product jingles are all by the same person, and you can tell. So... I need to justify this in the story somehow. So then I hit him up on Facebook Messenger or something, some chat program, and I was like, hey, how would you like to maybe like play a character in the game instead of just writing these jingles by a mystery person? And he thought it was a fun idea, and we came up with sort of this Kid Rock or Eddie Vedder mixture guy who is or the Faith No More guy, I guess, you know, a guy, he's a mixture of all these sort of maybe slightly cocky, slightly not super self-aware butt rock figures, but maybe transported 10 years before that.
You gotta drink it up all day and all night. Then you gulp it down after you chill it right. Come on. So many other beverages, which one is the best? How can you tell it's colder than the rest? Great.
He demoed a few of his things he had laying around, like a cowboy hat. And he even, bless his heart, shaved his facial hair into that kind of goatee, you know, to get that look. And yeah, so Chowder Man was born, and we made a... Basically, I did the same thing with the first Hypnospace game here, where he made a few songs to begin with, three or four. And we made the content around those songs. So we took the lyrics and we took, you know, some of the concepts, like the Chowdercopter, which he just mentioned, I guess, which became central to the game because he mentioned it. And I'm like, well, I guess we got to explain what the Chowdercopter is somehow. So we put that in the game. And yeah, it's a really fun way to work that way. Just let someone go a little crazy with a premise and then take what they did and smush it into the world, you know.
Hypnospace is really, really cool. All the kids are talking about it at school. Cool skateboard tricks, amazing tips, and eating Bopo's chips. We all love Hypnospace so much, it rocks, it is the best.
Although you do handle a lot of the music within Hypnospace Outlaw, there's actually a lot of collaboration in there. Like, say, there's this whole kind of hip-hop thing, flip-flop, with Red Strike as well, and there's a lot of different artists as well. So how did these connections come together?
All kinds of different ways. Some people are people I've known on the internet. Red Strike is someone I knew from the local music scene in Florida, where I lived. He used to have a band, a live band, who would play behind his music, and he would compose tunes, and then the band would do their own sort of riff on his composition, and it was really cool. So I was thinking, you know, early on I was thinking, what with Chowder Man and with Cool Punk and with everything, and I was thinking, man, like, this, all we have is like super white people music. So I was like, we need to have like some hip hop in here. And so yeah, I reached out to him and he was happy to do that. He sent me his stems. And then for his songs, he has another song that didn't make it in yet. Maybe I'll save it for like a possible sequel or something and put it in that. But so yeah. For his songs, they generally follow the same melodies and general chord structures of his original tunes, but I produced the track under his vocals to be a little bit different, to fit in with the Hypnospace world and like the sort of flip-flop sound, I guess, that I was trying. Because the gimmick of that was that it had a lot of double bass, a lot of jazz bass under it, that genre. So, and these certain drum samples. So I did that. But really, I could have used his originals. The quality of them is great, but I just wanted it to fit more with the, you know, this fake genre.
Yeah. Sometimes it seems like this world get the best of you. Just keep your head up. And keep pushing. Yeah. Hey. I know this thing called life can be ruthless. At times wondering how you're gonna get through it. All the worry and stress can be a nuisance, but it's always a better way. I can prove it. Big dreams of doing these big things, becoming mainstream and grazing the big screen. I wanted to do it all, but had little to give. How could I chase dreams? Could barely afford to live. No crib, no whip, sleeping on a park bench. Still walk to my shows on set at every event. Music was all I had, only thing that made sense. Rather flow to hot beats than struggle to pay rent. Life goes on.
Dan Warren, who did the Barnaby's Chair, and later they're called Barnaby, because of band drama. Also the same thing with the Chowder Man, is he just had these songs and we tied them into the game after he sent them. One maybe amusing thing is that one of his songs references Polaroids, like the company who do photos, do cameras or whatever. And it really bugged me because this was the only company, only reference in the game that snuck into the game of a real company in our universe. So we made up our own fake photo company that just spells Polaroid differently. And it's like a different, slightly different thing, but it's still photos, just so we could justify that song, because I didn't want to make him change it because it was such a cool song. So yeah, but yeah, that's such a fun part of this game. About halfway through making this game, or 75% of the way making through this game, I'm mixing words up. Anyway, through making this game, we realized we had this huge internet, we had all these songs and all these great artists and fans of theirs, and it was all tied together on this internet, but it wasn't really a game yet. It was just an internet. So then we sort of made it into a game with the cases and with the different time jumps and the pages evolving over time. But originally it was just an internet with a lot of music to download.
Well, that's it. So much of the game is just about exploring this world and its own culture and everything like that. And music really is a big part of it. And there's even this one page that I spent so long on just last night, detailing all the different genres and giving a history on the different genres and how they evolved into one another. So to you, what do you think that kind of variety in the music actually brings to the narrative and brings to the game?
So, I suppose it gives it something of a broad appeal, because maybe if you don't recognize the sort of nu metal Linkin Park-esque band or the Chowderman stuff, or if none of this connects with you, there'll probably be something in there that you'd like. So I think that it gives it a little bit of a broad appeal, because maybe, like in the internet, you can find the thing that you do like and just put that in the media player if you want to. But it's just a big interest of mine. It's really I can't pretend there was much of a game design reason for it. It was just something I really like. It's just different types of music and defining. Like genres, and trying to play with that and play with how the characters react to them and enjoy them. And it's just something I like a lot. And though I am slightly embarrassed that it's clear, I think if you play the game, that I'm not a big movie buff or a big TV guy, because there's like 3 TV shows mentioned and maybe 5 movies mentioned on a few pages and like 100 million bands. So it's a little bit lopsided, but
the music is definitely like right up there at the forefront of it, and as I say, like, it's such a big part of the character of it. And you might like to hear this, but like, you've got this one, it's even an offshoot genre of a genre you've created, Haze, then becomes Earth Haze. And even within that on its own, you have the fictional artist of Chet Pinehurst, who I got to the point within the game where I could hear something new in the background. I'd go, that's Chet Pinehurst.
Chet. Yeah, I had a fun time of making the Chet songs, because there was definitely a palette of what sounds this guy might use in my brain when I was making those ones. It was fun. Yeah, good old Chet.
And, how are you then? I mean, you mentioned a few of the doors that you use earlier on, but, like, I was definitely interested in some of the technical stuff behind the scenes, because even within the game, you've got, like, different audio files. You've got the HSMs, which are kind of more like MIDI files, and the AUDs, which are more like MP3s. So I was particularly interested in, with the HSM files, which are like MIDI files, whether you created a kind of personal set for that of sounds that was then used across the board for everybody, for all HSM files.
Yeah, actually there's a, we made a sequencer, it's called the Hypnospace Tune Sequencer, and on the PC version, it's in the game files. It's maybe called tunesequencer.exe. It's only Windows though, but because it would be too costly to port. Yeah, and there's also a page builder in the game files. But yeah, so basically we made this sequencer. It's a 32-step sequencer with, it's kind of like a tracker in that it has multiple patterns that you can make. So you can make up to maybe 50 different patterns, I don't remember, and then sequence those patterns. Of course it has all kinds of functionality like pitch bends and this really janky echo effect, which our engine that we used is a kind of an easy to use game making program called Construct. And as a result, you don't have much low level access to audio stuff. So when we had to do these effects, they just ended up sounding just somewhat janky. And also the coder who did a lot of, I hate to say my coder because he added a lot of his own pizzazz to the game, but he's a big music fan, but he's not super musical himself. So some of the ways that he coded this sequencer are just slightly different than what I would have done, or than what would be standard for a sequencer. Which, as I was, it annoyed me when I first, very very first started to make some of the music. But as I kept doing it, I was like, you know what, this gives it a pretty unique sound, because I started developing some tendencies. But yeah, for the sequencer, we did create a sample set. And some of them were borrowed from various sources, various synthesizers. Maybe a few were taken from some video game sound fonts, but then I manipulated them so we wouldn't maybe get into trouble. Who knows? I don't know who sues people over that, so I'm just being safe. And we also have an in-universe drum machine.
The PTRS one.
Yeah, that 1200, thing. Yeah. And so we took, in the lore, we took some of the jazz rock band, Clifta. We took some of the recordings that Chris is the dude who recorded that band, got that band together. And he sent me the isolated drum tracks. And so I cut those drum tracks into tiny, tiny samples and crushed them into like 12-bit resolution so that they sounded like old PCM drum machine samples. And then we used those in the sequencer so the drum machine samples were from the in-universe drum machine, you know? So I felt like that, maybe individually these things sound a little excessive, but I think it came together to give it a pretty cohesive and sort of, you know, alternate reality vibe to it, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you mentioned that jankiness as well, which is a big part of it. And with the HSM files, I'm sure that I wasn't just imagining it, but going as far as like those HSM files, which are essentially like MIDI files, like speeding up and slowing down when I'm browsing through the internet. I'm sure I wasn't imagining that.
You weren't imagining that. But that's also a problem that's actually just our engine creaking under the pressure of trying to trigger too many samples when it's not meant to do that.
But I kind of like that, though.
Yeah, you know, I kind of like it, too. It bugged me for a long time. But it's not, it doesn't go so slow, I don't think, that it's disruptive. So it's fine, I guess.
But no, because considering all the work on the audio otherwise, my first thought instantly was that it was deliberate, and I thought that was a nice touch. So I don't know if that is a relief at all.
Well, then pretend like I didn't say anything.
But no, I mean, I mentioned it there as well. I mean, it's not just things like that. I mean, there are very deliberate things throughout this whole thing, like the use of compression. I honestly thought was really genius because I am of the age where I was becoming really computer aware about 98, 99. So all of that audio sound just took me directly back to all of those crappy videos that you'd have on free CD-ROMs and things.
Oh, yeah, that both the... We didn't do much accurate. Well, I take that back. With the audio, we did some things that were accurate, like a lot of the odd files were using a version of LAME, the MP3 encoder that was from 1999.
Right.
So the newer versions of LAME, if you make a 96 kbps or even a 64 kbps MP3. It sounds amazing compared to what you would get in 1999 when you did that. They really made it fancy these days. So we, you know, that weird tinny cymbal sound and stuff. And also it kept the file sizes really small to do that. So yeah, that was definitely a must for us. It was, you know. Originally, I wanted only sequenced music, and then I was thinking, it's not super true to 1999 to have streaming everywhere, but then I kind of gave it up because I think the experience of hearing those, you know, pre-recorded songs is more important than being faithful in an already very unfaithful recreation. So yeah. That was quite fun to do that, but with the image compression, it's, you know, completely unrealistic, but we did make our own, I guess we could call it Hypnospace Safe palette of about 108 colors, and then we color reduced all the video and all the pictures to this particular palette, and then sometimes, you know, there would be dithering and to give it that old, you know, it almost looks more like an old CD-ROM game than it looks like how the internet looked, but you know, it works.
Yeah, it took me back to like old educational CD-ROMs that I would get for free around that age, where you could like move the human skeleton around and zoom in on yeah. And things like that.
Yeah, that kind of thing was also hugely influential.
Well, a lot of skeletons in Hypnospace Outlaw, that's for sure.
Quite a few.
Yeah,
I mean, you gotta have them. So.
Well, before I move into a couple more sound effects-based questions off the back of that compression stuff, there was some more musical stuff I wanted to ask, just a couple of questions. And you mentioned Clifter, which was like really right up my street, because you've mentioned all these different prog rock bands. I'm a big prog rock fan, and I just love this jazz fusion sound, like kind of Mahavishnu Orchestra kind of, almost, kind of thing. Really stuck out to me on the whole OST. So how were these tracks written? Were they jammed with a band at all? Because it sounds very authentic.
Yeah, it was. They were. So Chris Schlarb, and he actually is releasing the Clifta songs on vinyl with like a new album cover and everything. But he did the soundtrack for my last game, Dropsy, and he is a purist in that. In recording, he runs a studio in Long Beach, California, called Big Ego, which I don't know, maybe accurate, I don't know, but he does everything, you know, he's a purist, so he does everything analog, tries to do everything in the one take, same room with, you know, with the bands that he gets together. So he got some players, and he gave us a very good deal on getting the band together, and he wrote some tunes, and they just recorded them in a single day, I believe. But he has a video too of them. Actually, there's a little clip in the game of them performing, and I cropped out one of the more modern looking instruments so that it would maybe look more 70s than it really was. But yeah, Mahavishnu is a good point of reference for, I think, what he was going for. Originally, I was going to try to get him to do a magma, like a crazy sort of operatic prog made-up language band thing. But I think that was, like, just too much, probably. But I'm really, really happy with the Clifta stuff. It was quite nice. And I listened to that just... I guess I listened to a lot of it just outside of the game, but... Yeah, a lot of these songs have just become my favorite songs in general, so...
Yeah, it's really, really brilliant stuff. I mean, that main Clifta track that plays in the background of the reviews site, it just got me straight away. I had to put the controller down and just sit for a bit.
Yeah, it's so nice. I was hoping some people would do that.
Yeah, it was amazing. And there is so much ambitious stuff going on in the music here. Like, we already mentioned Cool Punk, which came off the back of the Chowderman character as well, which then in-game... If people have made it this far, I assume they've already played through. This might be a bit of a spoiler, but Cool Punk eventually dies and becomes the fungus scene, which really comes out as some of my favourite music on the whole game. I am a huge fan of the Basidia stuff. So I just wondered, really, if you had any comments on that, because is it Ghost in the Grotto, I think, is my favourite track on the whole soundtrack.
Wow, thank you. Yeah, so... That's really nice to hear. The Basidia stuff was the stuff I was making that I just was trying to make good, interesting music. Though it still kept to some of those fictional standards for fungus scene. So for that it was defined as having spring reverb a lot. So a lot of the percussion sounds were drenched in the spring reverb, and I have a little tank here that I got for just $20 on Amazon or something. And so all I do is just hook my sounds out from my interface here into the spring reverb tank, and then back into the interface to get the real sort of drippy, springy reverb sound. And so all of those, many of the tracks on all of the Basidia tracks were just drenched in that spring reverb. That's probably my favorite as far as the music I made. The Formations and Ghost of the Grotto, I think, are my two favorite tracks. Other than maybe the end song, though I didn't compose that one. I just arranged it, so... and recorded it. So the Millennium Anthem, that one might be my favorite, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's an incredible piece of music as well. But for my last question about the music, really, we've covered all these different genres, and really, if you look at the character of Dylan Merchant alone, has got so many different aliases and plays with so many different genres himself. How easy is it for you to get into musical character for someone? And is there anything you found that you struggled with?
So I did struggle with, I guess, the Cool Punk stuff, because so there's a subplot with Cool Punk where the person who did the Basidia, the fungusine band music, is the original Cool Punk guy. He is Freezer, is the Basidia guy. And what happened was Freezer, as it originally was sort of, you know, experimental, and there's this 7 or 8 minute track called Colder Than the Rest, which was like sort of the track that started Cool Punk. And it was, you know, had like this ironic use of the Chowderman samples and stuff like that. And a saxophone solo. But anyway, so that whole subplot came from the fact that there was just some inconsistency, because I first made Icy Girl and Chill It Right, by Freezer. And those lyrics I wrote intentionally to just be incredibly stupid, just very bad lyrics about liking girls who don't like you back. And then like really real pathetic lyrics. And then many of the vocoder tones and many of the synth sounds had some similarities, and even some of the drum sounds, to Basidia, a little bit too much for my liking. So I was like, it's going to be so obvious that it's the same person, and these are supposed to be two different artists. So I just ended up making that a subplot. The guy who started Cool Punk then sort of sold his act to a record label, and they wanted him to play big concerts, and they also got producers to help him write more accessible music, and he just wasn't feeling it anymore, and he just let them take over his old Freezer project, which is why they have this guy who lip syncs and all that and writes bad lyrics. And then he goes and he tries to make a new movement to sort of try to combat his now hijacked initial movement. So that kind of thing happened a lot, where I was like, there's an inconsistency here. And then so I either changed the game lore to make it fit, or I recorded things differently to make it fit. But again, these are things that, like, maybe weren't strictly necessary, but I think added together it makes a bit of a more solid experience, you know.
It absolutely does, and that shows how much music is in the DNA of this game as well, like really deep in there, influencing the very narrative as well. But then how about sound then as well, because there are a lot of cool things going on, the sound effects and the sound design. How do you go about designing something like that? Because it's a completely different thing to music.
Yeah, so the sound design, for the operating system sounds, many of them, some of the sound themes that you can get, I compressed most of them down, I think, to 8-bit mono wave files, or sometimes stereo, depending on how immersive they need to be, like the nature-y one. So that give, and that's, you know, the same compression they used in old CD-ROM applications. And when the sounds get too quiet, it sort of starts to fizz out, and you hear this fizzy, sort of hissy sound as the tail of reverb fades out, kind of. There's my tone. And so that was very important to me, was to make most of the system sounds have that sort of 8-bit wave sound to them. And then for the original sound set for HypnOS, your operating system, I used an OPL emulator to program those. So it's just a VST instrument, and you can mess with the parameters to, you know, mess with the carrier and modulation and FM synthesis stuff. And so I just automated sounds that way and made sounds with basically an OPL emulation to give it that sort of old computer, you know, 90s computer sound card sound, you know. And those after I did that, then I would again, you know, export them to that 8-bit wave. But then for the year 2000 update, I tried to make it sound as pristine as possible, just to make it feel, and there's pianos and strings and you know, that sort of maybe Brian Eno-esque OS sound thing going on. And I tried to make that as pristine as possible and uncompressed, so that once the year 2000 update hit, it did feel like you jumped maybe into a new era or something like that. Also, the intro splash screen changes into being a pre-rendered thing with higher color count after that update. so that it ideally and also the windows, the theme of the windows also gets smoother and has more gradients instead of like that sort of blocky look. So I hopefully all of that works together, you know, to make it feel like a new, you're stepping into a new era or whatever they were trying to sell, you know.
And you mentioned playing with the OPL and things like that, and you actually have a soundscape generator within the game that you can download that will generate sounds in the background just while you surf around. Is that kind of an offshoot of that kind of thing?
Yeah, I really wanted to make... I think the original purpose of that was... Well, it's going to be very annoying, we were thinking, for people to just have auto-playing music constantly all the time on every page. So maybe instead we'll just have this soundscape generator that you can just turn on so there's some audio happening if you disable auto-playing. But in testing, we found that no one cared and people enjoyed listening to the music loops. Maybe because it's a game and not the real internet. So people expect music all the time in a game, so it was fine. But so we just put it in as an optional fun thing. And it was a little bit of a... It was inspired by some of these sort of VST, virtual instrument interfaces, that have lots of knobs you can fiddle around with, and you don't really quite know what they do. And you can also... Modders can pretty easily just make their own soundscapes if you want. There's an INI file that defines how frequently a certain sample set triggers and what pitches, and if it has like a mirror effect, stereo effect, and if it has any vibrato. And yeah, we just had fun with that. And I felt like it meshed well with the sort of quasi-new agey feeling we were going for with some of that early software. Had that thing too, where it was a little full of itself. It had this sort of spiritual overtone to it, you know, all the time. And so I thought the soundscapes really supported that sort of mysterious, like, early computing, early 16, 32-bit computing vibe.
Yeah. And there's this really cool page you can come across featuring tone stalls, where you can actually kind of like play around with them and kind of make your own kind of soundscapes and things like that, and different sequences of sounds. Where did that come from? I thought that was a really engaging idea, and I played around with it for quite a while, actually.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so that was... That was really just something I made up spur of the moment, because we had that may have been one of the last things we added to, and that came in the plus update, that Tonestool page. But that's part of the cavern, which is the fungus scene sort of underground collaborative ring of pages, I guess. And for so long, it was just a blank page with like the looping fungusy background. And I didn't know what to put there of substance, but we had these scripts that our coder used that I hadn't put anywhere, which is, you know, upon click you can change the pitch of a sample. So I figured, well, I'll make some pre-rendered mushrooms and they trigger sounds. Why not?
So, well, that again took me back to my childhood. But yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh no, yeah, good. I mean. But I ended up really having fun with that and liking it. And some of my guitar samples that went unused, I was able to find a place for there. And it also was a nice contrast to later in the cavern. There's this kids page, Drip Boy. And he has a real wacky sort of song, because he always... He's a dude trying to fit in and never quite gets what's going on, but I thought it was a nice contrast if you play around with these sort of soothing or you know, calming sounds, and then you're hit with like this kid's silly page. I thought that would be fun.
Do you hear that plop, plop, plop? We're fungus seen, now do the mushroom hop. Drip boy's coming, now he's here. His fungus beats are music to your ears.
That only really leaves me with three questions as we move into a slightly different direction, which is kind of voices, and with the main one being the one you'll probably hear the most, which is Hippie.
You've got hypno mail.
So how did you decide on that voice, and was it kind of a stock sound, or was it a kind of TTS that you kind of designed yourself?
So Hippie ties into your operating system, so are you on Windows? Or
I actually played it on PlayStation.
Oh, PlayStation. I don't know. Okay, so for the console version, we had to just get our own put together. And that was our porting house actually took care of that, because I know nothing about coding. So they found an open source text-to-speech thingy and just hooked it in there. Sadly, PlayStation doesn't have its own onboard text-to-speech as far as I know, or else we would have tried to tap into that. But on PC versions, it taps into whatever your operating system's default voice is. So on Windows, it's Microsoft David, which sounds very Bonzi Buddy. And then on many Macs, the voice is feminine, which I felt a little bad about because we call Hippie a he all the time, but whatever. it really just ties into whichever system you have. But on consoles, that might be my favorite. Like, I know it's an open source one, but it's so crusty and so I don't know if rudimentary sounding is the way you'd say it, but it just sounds a little older and crustier than the more modern Windows and Mac voices. So I really like how the console voice sounds.
Whether you're new to Hypnospace or a veteran citizen, you've come to the right place.
So besides Hippie, you actually hear a fair amount of yourself in there, be it singing or through voicing characters as well. So how comfortable are you voice acting? Because I actually thought you came across as really professional.
Thank you. I mean, in that I'm trying to sound incredibly unprofessional.
Indeed, though, yeah.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. But, yeah, that was fun. And that came out of necessity, too. Because we had made this tutorial, and we had this this woman record the tutorial lines. And we ran out of time because we rewrote parts of the tutorial, but couldn't get her in time to re-record. So I'm like, how do I do this and make it not dumb? So I guess the solution was to make it very dumb and then just make a goofy voice and make myself sound like a dude who just had to edit this in, because that's actually what happened. I had to edit it in. So I just, this is the mic I use, and I just, you know, I don't want to blow your ears out, but I just got real close and made more of a lisp than I normally talk with, and I pitched my voice down to semitones as well for that. Yeah, that was fun though. I felt pretty comfortable with that. If I had to sell myself sounding professional, then I wouldn't have felt comfortable, but I can do that. I can do the unprofessional guy.
Direct your attention to the top of your desktop, and you'll notice the HypnoS info bar. From left to right, this handy toolkit features quick access
to the settings menu, the quick switcher, the application menu, the current date and time, your HypnoCoin balance, the restart and log off buttons. Make sure to click the log off button to save your progress and safely exit HypnoS.
For my very last question then, were you involved at all with directing any other, of the other voice actors or anything like that? Because again, I thought the whole package and the whole aesthetic of Hypnospace Outlaw was just perfect.
Not really, too much. I gave them some guidance, I just picked good people because they kind of got what I was going for and nailed it. Like Professor Helper did such a great job, and the tutorial lady from the beginning, I think, really nailed that sort of corporate. That's what her main gig is corporate phone voice work. So I thought that was perfect.
I think I was pretty much sold on that pretty much instantly, because I felt like, well, you being the creator behind the game and her voice in the lines just got it, got what I expected the game to be with that aesthetic and that sound. I think there was a certain inflection in a sentence of hers. I was just like, that's it. That's the exact Nighty's aesthetic.
Thank you. Yeah, maybe you... I think she did such a good job on the intro video that has all this, like I said, quasi-spiritual, maybe techno-spiritual language to it, where she's welcoming you into this new era of computing and stuff like that. And she did such a good job at, like, striking this balance between, I don't know, professional corporate and, like, weirdly culty spiritual that... I just think it sent the right vibe out. So, yeah,
no, it's absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you for speaking to me today, Jay. That was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, thanks, Lee. This is great. I love talking about the audio and the music. I don't get to do that so much, so it's a lot of fun.
Well, as someone who talks about game audio and game music pretty much all day, every day, this is one of the most fascinating games that I've heard in years. It's really, really grabbed me.
Well, thank you.
No problem. I'll look forward to the next project, Matt, and hopefully we can talk again then when there's more to catch up on.
Yeah, perfect. Talk to you soon then.
Absolutely, and have a good day, man.
You too.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.